Last Friday, if you were on the email group list that alerts us when we have a food need that we'd like to help with, if you saw that email, you may have wondered about something that was expressed in that. Teresa noticed it and sent me a message in reply. She said that my choice of wording was incorrect. In that email, I said that I planned on being out today. She said when you said that you were going to be out today, that meant that you were going to be in today and not there. I understood out as out and about. She understood out in the opposite sense. If you're here for the morning assembly, we had the same problem with Darlene. I said, she's out today. Well, Darlene's back there waving her hand. No, I'm in today. I'm present. So the question becomes, what does out mean? Does out mean out or does out mean in? Language can be a funny thing. We can hear exactly what someone else hears, and yet we come away with a completely different meaning. In Matthew chapter 26 and verse 27, Jesus said to the apostles, drink ye all of it. Now, I've met some Christians, not many, but over the years I have met some Christians who, as they look at those words, drink ye all of it, they think that means to drain the cup dry. Just as we might try to clean every speck of food off of a plate, so some in Matthew chapter 26 have said that they need to get just about every drop out of the cup. Then there is what I would consider to be the more standard thought, process, or explanation from people, and that, of course, would be all of you need to drink this beverage. The second explanation is the one, of course, that the Lord intended for us to take away from that passage. All God's people have an obligation to partake of the Lord's Supper, but that does not mean that we have to lick the cup to get every single drop out of the cup. For our first study, and this was mentioned in the prayer, for our first study, we looked at the bread as far as how it relates to the Lord's Supper. Now we want to look at the second half of that, and that, of course, is going to be the fruit of the vine. Immediately after Matthew chapter 26 and verse 27, we have this, Matthew 26 and verse 28. Here the Lord said, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many unto the remission or the forgiveness of sins. Jesus, as he talks about the cup, he refers to the contents of that cup as his blood. Now that's not literally true, obviously, because Jesus' blood was in his body. He had not yet died. But the contents of that cup, what that cup represented, what that cup symbolized, Jesus said, you all need to drink of it, Matthew 26 and verse 27. And then in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 29, the Lord said he was going to be with his people as they carried out this act. Now, had we been with Jesus on this occasion, had we heard as a Jew the words of Jesus, we probably would have been shocked beyond words. If you go back to the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis, and you look in Genesis chapter 9, you have some information about Noah and the time after the flood. God told this man, this great man, what he could eat. And that's in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 3. And then in that next verse, Genesis chapter 9 and verse 4, God said that when Noah ate food, it could not have any blood in it. Some years later, the law of Moses goes into operation. God comes back to the same idea in Leviticus chapter 17, verses 10 through 12. And in those three verses, God once again says, you can't ingest the blood. Stay away from the blood. This is also the place, Leviticus chapter 17 and verse 11, where God says, life is in the blood. This was so important that in Leviticus chapter 17 and verse 10, God said, if you ingest the blood, if you drink the blood, God said, you deserve to be cut off, expect to be cut off from my people. Stay away from the blood. Under the Old Testament law, meat was offered to the priests as far as part of their pay. They did receive some meat to eat. But when you look at the blood associated with that meat, what do you find? You find that that blood was either sprinkled around the altar or it was poured at the base of the altar because of that prohibition in Leviticus 17 and what Genesis 9 looked forward to or pointed out as well. No blood as far as ingesting it. Not today. There are, as we look at the people who claim to be Jews, there are individuals who say that they follow the Old Testament, but they break many parts of the Old Testament law. But you know, one of the things that, to my knowledge, every person who claims to be a Jew does, they buy meat from kosher markets. And if you buy meat from a kosher market, it's going to be meat where the blood has been completely drained from the animal. The Jews understood the importance of not drinking the blood. So in the present, in the distant past, Genesis 9, and in the moderately distant past, Leviticus chapter 17, people knew that drinking blood was wrong. Stay away from it. Now, let's go back to where we were a few minutes ago. Remember Matthew chapter 26? Jesus, not long before he goes to the cross, he's instituting the Lord's Supper. What does he say? Drink this. All of you drink it. What are we doing, Lord? You're going to be drinking my blood. That should have shocked these guys since they were Jews because of all that Old Testament history. Let's tie in something else. John chapter 6, different context. Jesus also talks about drinking his blood, but the communion is not under discussion in John chapter 6. In John 6, the context is accepting, embracing, bringing the Lord's teachings into one's life. And that's where Jesus said, you've got to eat my flesh and you've got to drink my blood. Again, not literally, but you need to fully absorb my teaching. Now, we have similar language to John 6 in Matthew chapter 26, but it is a completely different meaning. Even though the context in John 6 is different, listen to the reaction of the Jews. When they heard this idea about eating Jesus' flesh and drinking his blood, many of the people who heard John chapter 6 and verse 60 said, this is a hard saying. This is difficult. And it would have been for a Jew, knowing what you knew about the blood, knowing that it went back all the way to Moses' time. Jesus, this great man, shows up and he says, you need to drink my blood. The Jews are thinking, how can that be possible? Why would this great man say such a thing like that? When we looked at the bread, earlier lesson, we considered why God chose this item instead of something else, like telling us we need to have lamb every Sunday. When we look at the fruit of the vine, we can ask a similar question. Why would God have chosen the image of blood when it comes to the Lord's Supper, since blood had so much baggage attached to it in Scripture? I don't think it's all that popular now as far as what things used to be like, but it's still done in some places. Maybe in this country you've had a hunter in a field. Maybe he killed big game, something like a deer. And after the deer was killed, he decided that he was going to drink some of the deer blood while it was still warm. I've known a few people like that. You may have some people in a foreign country, cannibals. They will kill an enemy, and then they will take the blood from that enemy and drink it. The thinking there is if you drink the blood of an animal like a tiger, or you drink the blood of a deer, or you drink the blood of an enemy, you are going to absorb the strength. You're going to get part of the benefits offered by that creature. I've even read, believe it or not, that there have been some people, some women, who wanted to get pregnant. They were having a fertility problem, so they got blood from a pregnant sheep and drank it because they thought that would help them become pregnant. A little more familiar to us would be a transfusion. Went back and reread some information about a fellow who wrote a book. He's a doctor. And as this young man was trying to become a doctor, he was in a particular area outside this country that was sort of rough. And one day he was with a woman who was in the process of dying. He described her as someone who was very pale, someone who was white. And I mean, it looked like she was gone. Her lips were pale. It looked like the signs of a pulse were gone. There was no indication that she was breathing. This man thought, she's a goner, time to call the undertaker. Someone with a little more experience got a bottle of blood. They hoisted that bottle of blood above the lady. Large needle was inserted into her arm. And then that blood began to flow in what appeared to be a lifeless body. He watched that first bottle of blood emptied into the woman's vein. And nothing happened. Then they swapped out that used up bottle for a second, and then a third. As more and more blood was pumped into the lifeless body, the cheeks of the woman started to become flush. A pulse in her body now became evident. And then she started to breathe. And soon, believe it or not, the eyes of this woman, they sprung open, and the lady said, I'm thirsty. The person who donated the blood for this woman gave what was necessary to make this lady live. And that is what we find in Leviticus chapter 17. God said, life is in the blood. And that's true. If you don't get that transfusion, if you don't get that infusion, you're going to die. Life is in the blood. When it comes to Jesus, we might say that the Lord has, when it comes to anything, but especially his spiritual health, he has perfect spiritual health. We don't have that problem. We've got, if you will, a blood problem. We need a transfusion. We need to get stuck, if you will, and connected to somebody who's got good blood, or we're going to die. We're not going to make it. Having Christ in our life means that we put him first in our life. It means that we allow him to live and do what he needs to do. And the Lord's Supper should be, God intended for it to be, a process which allows us to stay connected to Christ. Now, one of the things that I've never witnessed, and I'm not too keen on a lot of the medical procedures as far as going in and watching, I guess I'm not all that queasy, but some of that stuff just doesn't fascinate me nearly as much as some. But I have seen some pictures of what you might refer to as an arm-to-arm transfusion. Imagine a person, someone who's dear to us, and this person needs blood, or they're going to die. And we are the person who's going to offer our blood to save him or her. So we're taken to the hospital room, and the person says, "You lie down on this bed," and we have our friend in the next bed. We're elevated to a slightly higher position. And they take that needle, and they put that in the arm of the person who's sick, and then they get our arm, and they put a needle in our arm. And that blood begins to flow from one arm to the other arm. Life is in the blood. We have an ongoing need to be connected to Jesus Christ. There's got to be that connection, and it has to be a daily connection. Now think about that in terms of the frequency when it comes to communion. Somebody comes along and says, "Well, we have communion where we worship once a year. Or we have communion twice a year. Or we have communion once a quarter. Or we have communion once a month." That's not going to cut it. A person understands that there's value in communion. But a person doesn't understand that it is that connection to the blood of Christ that we have every 7 days, the day that God has appointed for worship. Life is in the blood. And if we're going to contact on a continuing basis the benefits of that blood, communion is one of the ways that we access that. It's not wrong to remember the power and the blessings of Jesus' blood at a frequency other than weekly, but that is God's plan when it comes to worship. If you study about blood, it doesn't take long to realize that blood is designed to cleanse all the cells in our body. Blood is designed to help wash away a lot of the debris in our bodies. At times we sing about there's power in the blood, and that's true. That's true in the physical realm. It's also true in the spiritual realm. The blood in our bodies is designed to do great things, and the blood of Christ is also designed to do great things. When we have the fruit of the vine, we should be strengthened by that every single time. When you look at the first century saints, you know one of the things that you don't find? You don't find a bunch of crybabies. When the first century Christians had to scatter because of persecution, they went. They left home. They gave up their jobs. They left their houses. Families were probably split apart. When we have Christians being beaten or killed, they stayed strong. Why? Because they understood the connection to the blood of Christ. When Christians were asked to give up their all for Jesus Christ, they did that. Why? Again, the power is in the blood. In the book of John, if you were to read all 21 chapters, you would find that Jesus, on 7 different occasions, has an "I am" saying. One of those "I am" sayings is found in John 15. And that's where we're going to spend just a few more minutes. The chapter begins with, "I am the true vine." And then as you look at verse 2 of John chapter 15, the Lord talked about every branch in me that bears not fruit. Now think back to the illustration that I gave a few minutes ago as far as a transfusion and how that literally brought life to a woman. And today how that process still works. If we are connected to Christ, if there is that blood symbolically flowing in our life, we should be someone who is full of Christ. If we are a Christian, that means that we should be busy, we should be active, we should be dedicated, we should be a key part of a congregation. I submit, based on the analogy that we have given by God, the information in John chapter 15, that Jesus cannot imagine. Jesus cannot wrap his head around someone being a Christian and somehow not being productive in his kingdom. It just can't work. Because as long as you've got that connection to the blood, the Son of God, if you have that life-giving blood as far as part of your life, there's no way that you cannot be active and committed in the kingdom of Christ. This point can be added as well. If we get connected to Christ and the benefits of that powerful blood, and we are unwilling to be a productive member in the kingdom, may I suggest, going back to the analogy where you have blood flowing from one arm to the other, that the Lord picks up that line and he just shanks it out. Someone says, well, how are you going to get that from the Bible? I'm going to get that from the Bible in John chapter 15 and verse 6. Jesus said, if you're not willing to be a productive member of my kingdom, he says, you're going to wither. You're going to die. You're going to be taken away and you're going to be burned. Your supply to the life-giving source of blood is going to be cut off. Well, that makes sense. Because if we're not going to allow the benefits of that blood to do what God wants it to do, then Jesus is going to take it away. We may not fully understand all the reasons why God used the fruit of the vine for the Lord's Supper. But we can at least make the basic points that we've looked at today. The bread reminds us of God being present, Christ being present. The bread reminds us that we are a single body of people, joined together with our weaknesses and our faults and all the other things that may not be so attractive. And then we have the fruit of the vine. And that fruit of the vine reminds us of the power which is available, which comes from being connected to Christ. There's power in the blood of the Lamb. There's power in being connected to Christ. Not supernatural power. We're not talking about the ability to raise the dead, but God's help in the providential realm. Most of us have heard 1 Corinthians 11 read many, many times. It's in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 28 where Paul said that we need to examine ourselves. We need to check ourselves out. Now, the context of that examination is to focus on how we're partaking of the communion. Are we thinking about the right things? Are our minds directed to spiritual pursuits or secular pursuits? But based on what we've said this morning, let me suggest a somewhat added dimension to 1 Corinthians 11, verse 28. We might also examine ourselves as far as our commitment to Christ. Is our connection to Christ, is our connection to the blood, really reflected every day in how we're living? Are we really trying to live in a way which is different from the unsaved? Has access to the blood of Christ affected our life? Has it changed our life? Has it made us noticeably different over the last 7 days? If the answer to that question is yes, great. If our answer to that question over the last 7 days is no, the question then becomes, what's wrong? What's out of whack? What's out of kilter in my life? I believe that most people recognize the value of communion, at least on some level, but for many of them, they really do not understand the significance of it. Do we? If we do, we should be someone who is absolutely committed to the cause of Christ, doing what we can, when we can, as long as we can, young or old. Today, that's a challenge that we close with. Are we that kind of person when it comes to the Christian life? You're here. We trust that's true. If you're someone who needs some help in that way, we'd like to offer that to the best of our ability. If you need to become a Christian, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, we would be glad to speak with you about those things as well. But again, think about that connection, the blood of Christ. It's there. That spiritual power frees us from sin, 1 John chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. Justified by sin, the Bible again and again talks about that blood in a powerful way. And God says, this is my benefit, not my only one, but this is my benefit to you that you can think about and have every single day. The power is there. Is it working in our life? Those are the questions that we're asking as we stand and sing the selected song.